When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
From KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line.
Those mid swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Touchdown, Kansas City.
Now, Matt Pauley.
Pelicans win. Pelicans win.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
On Tuesday night, we welcome you in. It is time for a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley, taking you for the next 2 hours till 8 o'clock. Gas House Gang coming up after me with a special guest this evening, as Derek Gould is going to join Tom Ackerman and Kevin Wheeler. So we've got you covered from a sports perspective over the next 3 hours tonight here on KMOX. We've got a lot coming up on the program today. In about 10 minutes or so, we are going to head to Houston and talk with Patrick Creighton. He is a host doing the night show on Sports Radio 610 in Houston. What do Houston people think about the possibility of Nolan Arenado becoming an Astro? We'll talk with Patrick about that. We'll talk a little other stuff about the Astros while we have him on. Kevin Wheeler next hour is going to join us for our weekly conversation, which we generally do on Fridays. We don't have a Friday show this week. In fact, this right now, what you are listening to at this moment, is our only just standard, normal, run-of-the-mill 2 hour sports open line this week. Yesterday, we were at the Jack Buck Awards, which, by the way, how cool was that? That was my first time experiencing the Jack Buck Awards, and I just looked around the room, and I looked at just the, I think I used the term sports dignitaries on the show yesterday. That's what it was. So many, a high percentage of the power players in the St. Louis sports world were all in one room last night, and it was really cool. And I, not many cities have opportunities and situations like I've lived in other cities, by the way. Like, maybe I shouldn't say what I'm about to say, but you know what? I'm going to. I lived in Milwaukee. You know what? The Brewers and the Bucks and the Packers, and like, they don't always pull in the same direction. They aren't always shooting for things. There's a little bit of a rivalry there. And I'm not saying, look, there's the Cardinals and the Blues, they are competing for some of the same corporate dollars. Like, there is competition between some of these teams in that standpoint. But from a greater good perspective, I think it's pretty remarkable the different organizations and just everything sports related in the St. Louis area, and how everybody very much, for the most part, is pulling in the same direction, and seeing that just an illustration of that last night at the Jack Buck Awards was really cool. Really, really cool. So I'm glad I got to be there for a little bit. And that was a fun show for sure. So just a quick little sidebar on that. Also coming up, so Kevin Wheeler is going to join us again. We're doing our Friday conversation on a Tuesday because tomorrow will end early for SLU Billikens basketball. Thursday will end early for Thursday Night Football. Friday, no technical sports open line. That's when the Countdown to Opening Day show is going to air, generally on Thursdays this week. It's going to air on Friday here on KMOX. And then I hope you stick around because coming up at about 7:30, 7:35 or so, a guy by the name of Rob Connolly is going to join us. And I do a terrible, terrible job of explaining what his company is. But I met this guy at the winter meetings and I got the chance to talk with him. He was waiting for SEC approval on his company, so we weren't able to run the interview while I was in Dallas. I talked to him on the condition that I would hold the interview until his company got SEC approval, and they did, so I'm able to run this tonight. His company is called Finleet, and one of their clients is Leonardo Bernal, who's one of the prospects in the Cardinals organization. And essentially what his company does is you invest in athletes. So if you're a Leonardo Bernal and you're making a minor league salary, so you're not making very much money, Cardinals fans are able to basically give him money and he is able to pay for the training stuff that he needs to do in the offseason and, you know, any other cost that goes along with being a professional athlete who's not making very much money. And then once those individuals get to the big leagues and start making big money, the money starts going back in the other direction. So you're literally able to invest in players. We've seen this happening in recent years with hedge funds. Fernando Tatis did this for the San Diego Padres. He took some money from a hedge fund, and now that hedge fund takes a percentage of his salary every year, and that hedge fund is making bank off that. They gave him like $500,000 or something, and they've made like $30 million or some crazy number like that. I probably got the numbers wrong, but you get the idea of where I'm going. So this is supposed to be a little bit less predatory, and there's also like a fan part of it as well where there might be some experiential stuff or maybe you'll get a signed baseball or maybe you'll get an opportunity to go have lunch with an athlete or something like that where they can show you their appreciation for you supporting them as they were coming up. So when I talk about it right now, I talk totally positively about it. I'm still kind of trying to figure out how I feel about it because it's a brave new world. And we talked about that a lot yesterday when we were doing conversations about name, image, likeness. I think those two things are connected in a way of this is something that didn't exist before. It's financially related. You've got athletes getting paid money that just was not available to them previously. So yeah, Rob Connolly is going to join us in about an hour and 15 minutes. And you can listen to what he had to say and kind of evaluate for yourself your thoughts on it. But it's a very interesting space. In a sports show, we don't talk about that very often. If you're watching like Shark Tank, you hear about a space. We don't talk about that in sports very often, but it's an interesting space. I guess we do, you know, the NIL space and things like that, but we don't do it that often. All right, so that's kind of a rundown of what's going on. Right now, the team, and this is changing every few days, seemingly. At one point, it was the Yankees. At one point, it was the Red Sox. Right now, the team that is most closely connected to Nolan Arenado is the Houston Astros. So let's go out to Houston and see what the good Houstonians would think about Nolan Arenado manning the hot corner for the Astros moving forward. My guy Patrick Creighton, who hosts a show out there each evening on Sports Radio 610, he'll join me in just a moment. This is Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name's Matt Pauly. We've been talking a lot about this over the last week or so. We're now on day number 9 since Cardinals President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak, did say that he intended to trade third baseman Nolan Arenado. Since then, that happened last Monday at the winter meeting. Since then, Arenado has been rumored to be headed to the Yankees, to the Red Sox, and the latest rumors have him ending up as a Houston Astro. To talk about that and much more, we bring on my good friend Patrick Creighton. You can hear him in Houston on Sports Radio 610 doing the night show every weekday evening. He joins us right now. Patrick, appreciate you taking some time with us today. How are you?
What's going on, Matt? How are you?
I am good. I'm glad to be able to talk with you. So we'll get into some of the specifics, but just from a very general perspective, when the idea of Nolan Arenado becoming the Houston Astros third baseman gets broached, what do Astros fans in Houston feel about that?
Oh, I think Astros fans overall are kind of mixed about it. You know, obviously Nolan Arenado is a big name. He's a guy who comes in the league, wins 10 straight gold gloves, first 10 years in the league. You want to talk about a guy who has been robbed by bad voters of at least one MVP. And there are times this guy's led the league in home runs, RBIs, extra base hits. He's been a hell of a player. But he's also now, you know, 34 years old and been in significant decline for the last 2 years. And I got to tell you, there are two really large reasons why the Astros making a trade for Nolan Arenado makes about as much sense as, you know, if you and I were to both leave our beautiful wives and go elope with inflatable Christmas blow-ups. I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever. And it's wild that we're having this discussion because it literally goes against every single thing the Astros claim is their philosophy and hence why they don't want to pay Alex Bregman.
Is it completely based around the idea that he gets paid too much?
Well, no, actually, it's twofold, right? So it starts with this. You just traded for Isak Paredes and Cam Smith, who's already the number one prospect in your system. Paredes can play both corners. Cam Smith's a third baseman. So you're going to bring in an older player for 3 years and block this kid that you just acquired, who's a top 75 prospect and is likely to be ready next year. You're going to block him for 2 years, or you're going to do something that the Astros really did well when they screwed up Pedro Leon, which is take a guy who's a natural at one position and say, hey, you know what? We're going to play you in other positions that you've never played before in your life. Oh, and we expect you to continue to develop like you normally would. This has never gone well for them before. It's not. I don't know why they insist, hey, we got a top 75 prospect. Hey, let's play him in right field. Hey, kid, you ever played right field before? No? Good, you're going to learn. It's idiotic. It makes no sense. This is why you got Cam Smith, so you'd have a young third baseman who comes up and is with you for 6 years. And you have Isak Paredes, the only guy in the world who doesn't have to see Isaac, Isak Paredes for the next 3 years under team control as well. Then look at it from this point of view. Why do the Astros not want to pay Alex Bregman? Because they don't want to get stuck with the back 3 years of his contract where there's a lot of money and the production's on the way down. Why do they not want to give the money to Carlos Correa? Why do they not want to give the money to George Springer? Why do they not want to give the money to Gerrit Cole, to Dallas Keuchel, to Charlie Morton? Just keep going down the list. And what is Nolan Arenado? He's the guy on the back of that contract in the last 3 years with all the money and the declining production. He's literally the part of the contract the Astros don't want in any of the guys that they've just let go. And that's the guy they're going to trade for.
Let me play devil's advocate with you because we don't know if that deal were to get done. What we don't know is how much of the contract the Astros would actually take. The Cardinals' goal is to get out from underneath as much of the contract as possible. I'm sure any team he gets traded to, their goal is going to be to take on as little money as possible. Is there the blocking thing that you mentioned with Smith, that makes all the sense in the world, but is there a number that could make sense on the Arenado deal where if the Cardinals carry enough of it, you might change your tune a little bit?
It doesn't change the fact that Cam Smith is still blocked. And, you know, Arenado's per year isn't bad. It was $21 million this year, then $16, then $15. But there's all that deferred money. And, you know, the Astros are already paying Zach Greinke still deferred money from, you know, a deal from 2019. And, you know, they're still paying Jose Abreu, who they signed to a three-year deal, to not be on the team this year. So you're bringing in another older, declining player to that, I don't even know if he's going to be on the team in 3 years. You just had this go down with Yuli Gurriel, where you watched an older player age before your eyes. You just had it go down with Jose Abreu, where you watched an older player age before your eyes. You've already seen Arenado for the last 2 years, right? The home runs have gone from 30 to 16, right? The on-base is barely 300. His OPS has gone from 891 to 719 over two seasons. He still hits for a decent average, but he doesn't walk anymore, and the power is gone. Like, now you're going to bring this guy in for 3 years. You're already watching him age. It doesn't make sense when you just acquired your third baseman of the future who's 1 year away.
So are you also against the team re-engaging with Alex Bregman and bringing him back for basically the same reasons?
I would tell you, once they made the deal for Paredes and for Smith, it now no longer makes sense to sign Alex Bregman. I mean, what, so now again, so you're talking about, hey, if you bring in Alex Bregman and you sign him for that 6 years, and the $156 million is never going to do it. He wants something closer to $200 million. But you're bringing in Alex Bregman for 6 years. All right, we're moving Paredes over to first base. What's Cam Smith doing?
Yeah.
He's learning to play the outfield. We have no idea if he can play the outfield. We know he can hit. We have no idea if he can play the outfield. We know we can play third base.
You are somebody. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. It doesn't make sense. The deal you just made with Kyle Tucker filled your third base position starting next year for the next 6 years. So to bring in another guy who's going to be here for multiple years, all that does is set back your timetable.
Are Astros fans upset about the Tucker trade because that's a really good player walking out the door?
I think Astros fans had come to accept that there was a good possibility Kyle Tucker was going to get traded because there was no way on God's green earth Jim Crane was going to pay him. It goes against everything Crane has ever said. He was never going to give that kind of money. And at least this time, you knew ahead of time you weren't going to give him the money, and they went and they maxed out the value they could get for him. In the past, they hadn't done that. They'd let these guys play through, and then, you know, they walked and they got their, you know, compensatory draft pick, but they were also still in that mode where they considered themselves World Series contenders. Right now, they can't consider themselves World Series contenders. They got bounced out in the wild card round by the Tigers. Their rotation has been ripped apart by injuries for two straight years, and you still have a lot of guys that have question marks coming back from injury. Louis Garcia, Lance McCullers Jr., Christian Javier, J.P. France. I mean, they non-tendered Jose Urquidy because he's hurt, and they didn't want to have to pay him in arbitration. So their rotation has been beat to heck with injuries. They can't look at themselves as, hey, we're a World Series contender. You could say we can compete in the AL West because the AL West is softer than tissue, but you can't look at it and say, hey, we're going to compete with the best teams in baseball because you don't know. It was hard enough for them last year where they're bringing up people you've never even heard of for like one start here, one start there, trying to fill the rotation out, and it took them until June to get it right. So this is another year where there's a lot of question marks about that rotation. They really need to add another starter. Technically, they're going to take the reliever they got from the Cubs, and they're going to make him a starter, Wisniewski. But they need another starter. They got way too many question marks. I don't think you can look at it as, hey, we're still a World Series contender. You're not. Maybe you're a wild card contender. And as the reason they just traded Kyle Tucker is all the same reason why you might be trading Framber Valdez.
We're talking with Patrick Creighton. He is a host on Sports Radio 610 in Houston, talking through the possibility of Nolan Arenado getting moved to Houston and just looking at baseball and the Astros, generally speaking. So who do you think is the best team in the AL West as it sits right now?
Man, you just took like three Big Macs and threw them against the wall and see which one broke the least.
Yeah.
And the AL West is such a mess. I mean, you know,
it might be the Mariners, Patrick. It might be the Mariners.
It's not going to be the Mariners. The Mariners always trip over their own feet. They can't help themselves. Every time that you say, oh, the Mariners should go all in, they got a shot, and then they triple over their own feet. The Mariners are never all in. They always try to cut corners. You know, instead of going out and getting a big bat last year, they go and get Justin Turner, who's as old as you and me. They never go and make the big push move. You know, and now instead of going to get a bat, no, well, let's trade one of our awesome starting pitchers, and we'll get a bat that way. Okay, but now you're weakening the thing that made you great last year as far as, like what was your biggest strength? You had the best rotation in baseball. Yeah, let's break it. Like, they never go all the way in. So I will never believe in the Mariners. The Rangers, they've got a little bit more money this year, right? Their TV situation seems to be figured out. They brought back Nathan Eovaldi. You expect that the whole team is not going to forget how to hit this year. Some of those young guys, Carter and Young, they're going to be healthier, they hope. And they hope that Jacob deGrom is going to pitch this year, like the whole season. It's a lot to ask for, you know, Christmas wish, whatnot. But I think, with some health and some bounce back that you expect, the Rangers can compete. The Astros will be there. And believe it or not, I think the Sack of Tomato A's might actually have a chance to do something. They were a really good team in the second half last year. They've actually spent a little bit of money because they didn't want to get a grievance filed against them by the MLBPA. And I don't know how that ballpark is going to play out, but they've got a shot to be like a 500 team. And what's going to win the AL West this year? 88 games?
Maybe. Yeah. That's what won it last year with the Astros.
Yeah, I don't think you got to win more than that this year.
No, probably not. Last thing for you, I know you've got some background out east and some affection towards teams out there. Who is more likely to be at third base for the Yankees next year, Nolan Arenado or Alex Bregman?
I'd say Nolan Arenado. I'd have a hard time with the idea that Alex Bregman would sign with the Yankees. Like, there's way too much karma there that would have to be broken for Alex Bregman to go sign with, you know, the team that has talked the most trash about the Houston Astros, with the fan base that has hated the Astros more than any other fan base. Like, for Bregman, that is really just like going to the dark side in a manner that I cannot comprehend.
Interesting answer. Patrick Graydon is a fantastic sports host in Houston on Sports Radio 610. Follow him on Twitter at PCraydon1. Patrick, always appreciate the time, and I'll talk to you this evening. I'm going to pop on your show this evening, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you are, man. Appreciate you, brother. Talk to you soon.
All right, very good. Patrick Graydon joining us on the program. We'll take a break, and when we return, we'll preview what the Blues have going on tonight as they match up against the New Jersey Devils. We'll hear a little bit from Jim Montgomery. He met with the media earlier today at Morning Skate. We'll do that next. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. I don't know how to come out of this music with, like, energy. I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm being disrespectful to the music when I start yelling at you and saying it's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. I don't know what to do there. As I have gotten older, I have started to appreciate Christmas music more and more. And now I have kids, and my oldest daughter, all she wants to do is listen to Christmas music in the car. I was working out today, and I was selecting my my music, and I went to one of my favorite artists and on Apple Music, and the first thing that was listed was their Christmas album, and I almost pressed it. I almost worked out today to Christmas music. I did not, but it went through my mind. You know what? I could do this. I could maybe work out to Christmas music, but I decided not to do that. Welcome back in. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, taking you till 8 o'clock this evening. Next hour, Kevin Wheeler is going to have his weekly conversation with us. And also we're going to talk with Rob Connolly, co-founder of a company called Finleet. I tried to explain it earlier. It took me forever to do so I'm not going to do that again, but it's something very interesting, and you'll be interested to hear that. Blues hockey tonight, they match up against the New Jersey Devils, looking for a second straight win. They got a good win on Sunday when they knocked off the Rangers by a 3-2 score. That ended a two-game losing streak. That was the first time they had lost multiple games in a row since Jim Montgomery was installed as the head coach. And I'm a big believer in you got to stop losing streaks as quickly as possible, because before you know it, you're the Buffalo Sabres and you've lost 10 straight games. Like, they start to roll up, and the more losses in a row, almost the easier it starts getting to lose one game at a time. So it was good to see them get that win. And tonight they're going to match up against New Jersey. Some of the notable storylines going into tonight's game: Jordan Binnington, he is set to start in goal. He's going to face off against the Devils after breaking the all-time wins record for the team against New Jersey just a few weeks ago. From a lineup standpoint, Oscar Sundquist back in, Alexander Texier comes out, Dylan Holloway goes back to the wing, and Brandon Saad, who is just, man, he is fighting it right now. He is goalless in his last 14. 14 games. He is all the way down to the fourth line, so they're going to work real hard to try to find a way to get him going. Jim Montgomery did speak with the media earlier today at Morning Skate. Want to go through some of the things he had to say, starting with the opponent they're going to see tonight and the challenges they're going to face off with the Devils.
Speed, and just, you know, they play well. They track back. They defend their own zone well. They attack your net well. It's a good hockey team. It's a good challenge for us.
What do you remember about the game you played over there? Good start.
Yeah, real good start. The three goals quickly. Bad second period. Binner was fantastic. Broke Liut's record. Third period, I liked. We came out and we checked well, playing with a lead.
Blues are coming off an off day yesterday. Like, they got the complete day off. And really, since Montgomery became the coach, it's been a tough schedule. There hasn't been much time at home, just a couple one-off games. Had that one-off game against Philadelphia there at the end of November. Had the game against San Jose where they looked like they were just tired coming off that Western Canadian road trip, and they lost that game. So this is the first time they've been able to play back-to-back games at home. They're going to go back on the road, though. They're not going to have a stretch of a bunch of home games in a row until mid-January. So it's not the easiest way for him to come in and try to find some time where guys are sleeping in their own beds and getting some time off at home and things like that. But they did get just a legit day off yesterday, and Montgomery said that it was good to be able to get that day off.
Yeah, it does. You know, and more importantly, being in our beds, our own beds, for it's going to be tonight after the game, four nights in a row or three, whatever it is. It's most we've had in a long time.
Yeah, it is, like we said, and that's something that you just have to deal with. It's part of the schedule, and it'd be a little bit different for him if he was coming in from the beginning of the season. But to come in at this point of the schedule has been challenging. From a defensive pairing standpoint, and we've started to see Montgomery really shift the lineup stuff around, and we talked earlier about some changes. That is... I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to handle this, to be perfectly honest with you, because I did not like what Drew Bannister did with his lines. I thought he changed them up way too often. I didn't think the changes he made were very good. I'm a big Jim Montgomery guy, big fan of what he's doing, but that's part of his reputation. He's known as a guy who's going to shake things up pretty often, and we've seen him do it a little bit, and I think it is going to continue to happen. From a defensive pairing standpoint, the top defensive pairing for tonight is going to be Colton Parayko and then Cam Fowler. He's going to be on that top spot. Philip Broberg goes to the second defensive pairing with Justin Falk, and then Ryan Suter and Scott Perunovic will be on that third defensive pairing. And Montgomery today did talk a little bit about how he builds and how he makes the decisions on those defensive pairings.
Mostly it's just putting people in situations to succeed. O-zone starts tend to roll out your more offensive-minded defensemen. D-zone starts your bigger defensive-minded defensemen. You know, and then also just, you know, with Fowler coming on board, we have a lot of lefties. So who can play the offside? So we're getting a little bit of looks at that.
With the two games with him here, you just noticed better breakouts with him back there.
Yes, I have. You know, better poise too, especially anytime he gets the puck. There doesn't seem to be any panic to him.
Sidebar on Montgomery, and that's just a very small thing that he said at the beginning when, you know, how he makes his decisions and what he's doing. Tries to put guys in positions to succeed. And I've always been a big believer in the number one goal of a coach is to play to athlete strengths and allow them to be in the best position to succeed. And we talk about the Cardinals, we talk about that all the time. This infrastructure and this data and the technology that they're going to be implementing moving forward, at the end of the day, it's about allowing players to be the best version of themselves. There you have Montgomery talking about going out and allowing players to be in position to succeed, and it's something the really good coaches do, and it's just good to be reminded of that sometimes, and that was something there from Montgomery. So the power play this year has not been especially successful. If you watch what they're doing, I think at times maybe they are a little bit better than the overall results would say. And Montgomery today indicates that he would agree with that.
We're getting a lot of seam plays. We're getting a lot of low plays, which tend to be your higher. This makes sense. You're closer to the net, the higher percentage that's going to go in from where it's shot at. I think You know, Steve Ott's done a terrific job with the power play units, especially depending on who we're playing. He moves people around. Players understand their roles and the importance of puck and body movement. Last game was a hiccup. We gave up 2 scoring chances there. Odd man rushes up. We only had the 1 chance last game.
Last thing from Montgomery. Thought this was interesting. We're a few weeks into his tenure being back in St. Louis and being the head coach for the Blues. What has he enjoyed most about being back here?
The most exciting part was the excitement by the players' willingness to be coached, you know, and that is still there. I had a couple of meetings today, older players, younger players, and they're just, they're looking right in your eye, and they, you just see an eagerness to get better, which has been the most exciting part. And then I would say, like, within the city, you know, I had the good fortune of being able to go to the MAC event, the Jack Buck Award dinner show, and, you know, just seeing so many people. I forgot I used to be a member at the MAC, and how many people I know.
That is Jim Montgomery, who indeed was there last night. Tom Ackerman spoke with him for a few moments towards the beginning of that show, which, man, that was fun to be able to be a part of. We'll keep bringing that back up every once in a while. But that is Jim Montgomery. Blues tonight match up against the Devils. Puck drop over at the Enterprise Center, scheduled for a little bit less than 15 minutes from now. The Billikens are back at tomorrow, as they are going to be back at home, where they've been very good this year. In many ways, though, they're still trying to find themselves. We'll talk a little bit about St. Louis University basketball. We'll do that next as we wrap up hour number one of the program in just a moment here on KMOX. Back at it on a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Just a few minutes left here in hour number one. Hour number two, Kevin Wheeler is going to be with us for a little bit, and also going to talk about a brand new space in the world of athletics. Things are changing very quickly, and now there's a way for fans to actually financially support up-and-coming minor league baseball players. I'll explain all that. Actually, our guest will explain that coming up next hour. Billikens basketball tomorrow evening. They are back home, where they have been very good this season. Who they've been at home and who they've been on the road, different. That's nothing new. That's pretty standard. I've always said the greatest home advantage of all major sports, so whether you're talking pro football, college football, pro basketball, college basketball, baseball, hockey, I've always had the belief that the greatest home advantage comes in the world of college basketball, and we have seen that play out. Salute coming off a tough loss at Illinois State, 81-77. They're going to match up against Wofford coming up tomorrow evening, a 7 o'clock start. Our producer, you might recognize his name, Matthew Rocchio. He is with us now here at KMOX, and we're very, very happy about that. He's also the author of the Billiken Breakdown, which he links via his social media. And he was at the Josh Schertz media availability earlier today. And it does, that does seem to be one of the big things right now for this team, just the difference in how they play at home and how they play on the road.
Yeah, because the defense is completely non-existent on the road. And it's not much better at home, but at least, you know, some of the shots are falling. It's just they can't stop anybody from scoring right now when they're away from Chaffetz.
Are you surprised? And I'm a little surprised, but I'm also not, like, down on the team. I thought it was going to come together a little bit quicker just because you did have some of his Indiana State guys coming along with him. But it really does seem like that work in progress, where maybe who they are going to be is taking a little bit longer than most people expected.
Yeah, and it sounds like a trite excuse, but I mean, it is a fact, which is the injury bug has been ridiculous. Yeah. And at no point have they actually been able to practice with the full roster at any point. Today they were going in with 11 guys, and that's one of their most robust practices in the last 2 months. They've now pulled Dylan Warlick, who was going to redshirt. They've pulled him his redshirt off, and he's now playing because they just need bodies. So I think the expectations were there, and they have not been met. But there's real context as to why things are a little bit slower down at Chaffetz.
His rotation is tight, 7 guys a game, and that's partially injury related, partially not. We were talking off air earlier. He talked a little bit about injuries and the way that basketball players are being developed, and Kevin Wheeler got to talk about that from a baseball perspective next hour. But he did that at Indiana State, though. I mean, he's never really been a coach that plays a ton of guys.
Yeah, and I also like the way that he plays his guys, you know, their full minutes, and he doesn't foul out his own players. That's a big thing, is if you notice with Josh Hertz, he's one of the best teams in the nation at playing his players with two fouls in the first half. I hate when coaches foul out their own players. So he sticks with his guys. Part of that, again, is being exacerbated by the fact that he has such a short bench.
This is a Graybar Sports Open Line. More coming up after the 7 o'clock news right here on KMOX. As we get into hour number two of the program, we've got a lot coming up. We have a very busy hour. Kevin Wheeler's going to join us in about 10 minutes or so. When we generally have Kevin on for our weekly conversation, we're calling it our Friday conversation on a Tuesday because we don't have a full show coming up on Friday. In fact, we've just got countdown to opening day on Friday, so we won't have a sports open line at all. Generally, what we do with Kevin is we look back at the week that was and we just talk through kind of the baseball week. It's going to be a little bit different today. This is really complicated. Not complicated like hard to understand, complicated like there's just a lot of stuff. And Major League Baseball has presented a study on pitching injuries. During the baseball winter meetings, this study was presented to club personnel, and a little bit had gotten out, but not all of it. Now this 65-page document, 62-page, excuse me, this 62-page document is out there, and it looks at what is causing, what's the reason for pitching injuries. And it's very interesting. It focuses a lot on the quest for stuff. And that is both velocity and it's also break on the baseball, both horizontal and vertical break, that as pitchers are continuing to try to throw harder and harder and harder with more violent break, that is breaking the pitchers in many ways. Also gets into the fact that pitchers are not being developed in the minor leagues to be ready to pitch in the big leagues, not from a quality of pitch standpoint, but from a usage standpoint. Minor league pitchers are treated with kid gloves, sometimes way too far. And we'll get into this with Kevin. And we've been critical of the Cardinals when it comes to the way they have developed players and developed pitching, and rightfully so. And that's why they've made the changes that they're making. That's why Heim Bloom is going to be doing everything that he's doing. But one area that the Cardinals have shifted lately that I think was a really, really smart move, and I am hopeful that this new regime that's coming in from a player development standpoint continues down the path that the team has already been on. The Cardinals have put a priority in the minor leagues of starting pitchers pitching deeper into games. That's just something that doesn't really exist in development. And you get these guys getting to the big leagues who are not ready to give you 6-7 innings, who are not ready to make 30-plus starts, who are not ready to throw over 200 innings, like all these things that they're just not ready, and they end up getting hurt. And this report that came out kind of backs that up, that teams are not doing a good job. And this is not a Cardinals problem. In fact, the Cardinals, they've shifted a little bit recently, and credit goes to them. That's one area that they definitely have gotten it right. But there's a lot into this, and Kevin's the perfect guy to talk about this. He played baseball at a very high level, was a D1 college baseball player, has covered Major League Baseball for a very, very long time, and he's also a youth coach in the area, so he works with young players coming up. So we'll get into the weeds a little bit on this one, and hopefully you can enjoy it. But this was a really interesting report that came out today. I don't know. Kevin will make this point because we've talked about it a lot. The big rub here, because Major League Baseball now issues this big 62-page report basically saying you got to stop chasing velocity if you don't want to get hurt. Well, who gets the opportunities? Who are the pitchers that are getting drafted high? Who are the pitchers that are getting the opportunity? When the Cardinals had to bring up 9 million relief pitchers this year, who did they always pluck from the minor leagues? The guys who could throw 99. Chris Roycroft got an opportunity at the big league level because of how hard he threw. And that's not a criticism. That's the way you are successful, by throwing hard. Velo plays. It's harder to throw. It's harder to hit a pitch that's come moving very fast. And I'm not taking anything away from guys who can really know the art of pitching and everything, but it's clear that's where the game has gone. So now Major League Baseball issues this report saying, yeah, but you're going to give these guys the opportunity. But, oh, yeah, by the way, it's also going to end up injuring them all at the same time. So there's a lot to unpack on this. We're going to do that with Kevin Wheeler coming up in just a moment or so. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Matt Pauly continuing to hang out with you. So generally on Friday nights, we talk with Kevin Wheeler. Well, this is kind of, in a way, our Friday. This is our only, our last, this is actually like our only regular two-hour show this week. Yesterday, we did everything over at the Jackbox Sports Awards. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, we're done a little early. Thursday, we're done a little early. Friday, we're running the countdown to opening day show. So, Tuesday on a Friday, Kevin Wheeler joins us.
Good to be with you, man.
Yeah.
Happy Friday on a Tuesday.
Yeah, happy Friday on a Tuesday. but it's a good day to talk to you, and we were talking about this off the air a little bit. We had heard that Major League Baseball at the winter meetings had presented their findings about pitching injuries to teams.
Yep.
But that information was kind of being under lock and key. Today, various media outlets got it. It's 65 pages long. I've seen a lot of people write about it. Jeff Passan did a great job breaking it down on ESPN's website. And as I was reading it, I kept thinking about you because you are somebody who played baseball at a pretty high level. You covered Major League Baseball and you coach amateur baseball. So you've got a lot of different forces in your life that allow you to probably look at what was written today in a pretty unique way.
Yeah, I think so. And in addition, you know, the covering part includes countless conversations with active players, retired players, instructors, you know, doctors and scientists. Like, I mean, you know, these are topics, especially the topic of the arm for a pitcher has been a topic for a long time, right? I mean, Jeff Passan wrote his book called The Arm. What was that, like 12 years ago?
Yeah.
Like, so, and this conversation goes way back before that. This goes back probably at least 25 years to where people are trying to figure out how do we reduce or the number of injuries or how do we lessen the impact of them? And the problem is the answers that are there are not the desirable answers to Major League Baseball teams. And I know people like to shift blame and they like to blame. It's like people like me that do what I do, like, you know, coaching amateurs. I don't coach pitchers, so, you know, it's not specifically me. But although coaching a team, I do handle pitchers.
Absolutely.
I do have to handle pitchers. I will say that my program that I work with, which is the Gamers in St. Louis, we are very strict about how we manage young arms. Our director, Matt Whiteside, is a former pitcher, former major league pitcher, so we pay very careful attention. We do actually follow the recommendations of Dr. James Andrews. Most teams do not. But the point I'm trying to get to here is this all starts at the top. It starts with Major League Baseball teams, and Major League teams do not want to do the things that would help this issue. Because what they're doing, they've been so hyper-focused in, really, again, probably starting with Moneyball as a theory, with results. The results are what matter. Well, look, velocity works. It works. It's harder to hit something moving faster and spinning faster. It just is. And that's why everybody does it. And that's why Major League teams have always prioritized it. Always. You know, back in 1989... Steve Avery was drafted out of high school as a left-handed pitcher, and he threw like 89, 90. If he threw 84, he would not have been the number one pick right in the draft. But he threw, for that time, what was very hard for a high school lefty, get drafted by the Braves. He was in the big leagues pretty early. He was a part of the Braves dynasty rotation in the 1990s. But if he didn't throw 90, he wasn't going to be drafted at that level. And you know how we know? Because nobody who threw 84 was ever drafted number one.
Yeah.
Well, now instead of 90, that number is essentially 98 and above, right? If you're not throwing like that, you're not going to be drafted high. If you're not throwing at least in the mid-90s, you may not get drafted at all. And college teams now have some of those same standards. So it all trickles down from the top. And the criticism always starts with, it's the high school coaches or it's the travel ball coaches trying to make money. Like, no, everyone else is feeding the monster, and the monster is Major League Baseball. So if Major League Baseball says this is the standard you need to pass to be in our club, What do you think those kids are going to want to do?
Throw hard.
Right.
Yeah.
They're going to, if that's the standard that they have to meet, then that's what they have to give them, or their career's over anyway.
And I thought a really interesting point in it, talked to a surgeon, said with the technology, there's this belief that, you know what, you can just go get Tommy John surgery and you're going to be good on the other side. But the point was made, there's 20% of pitchers that don't come back out on the other side.
Not as well, right?
Yeah, so you do that, and if that number was more out there, maybe guys would not. But again, it goes back to your point. How do you go become a major league pitcher? How do you go make millions of dollars? How do you win a Cy Young Award? Like, how do you do all these things?
Compared to football. We know playing football causes brain trauma.
Sure.
It causes CTE. Does it stop anybody from playing football?
Not many.
Nope.
Very few.
not the guys that keep playing.
Yeah.
Right? It's part of, it might be as simple as, hey, this is part of the cost of throwing hard, and that's the cost, that's what it takes to play at the high college level or to play at the professional level. But I will say, you mentioned there are several interesting parts to this. Since we kind of already hinted at it, let's start with some of the amateur stuff, because, you know, I've been coaching, like, informally amateur players for more than 20 years. But here in St. Louis, with the Gamers, with All-Star Performance, since 2007. So I've been doing it quite a while as an individual instructor, as a catching instructor, as a head coach for a 14U baseball program. And we operate in a way that most programs do not. There are others that do, and we all bond over this because we joke about it with other, you know, amongst ourselves. But what we have to get Major League Baseball to do, this is where Major League Baseball has a role in this. They have to lay down the law on the organizing groups in youth baseball. Mm-hmm. And by the organizing groups, I mean the tournament organizers, right? Groups like Perfect Game. Perfect Game provides a valuable service. Kids get seen.
They're a little bit predatory at the same time,
though. No, yeah. It can be. Yeah. Listen, when you talk about those, I don't have any personal issues with Perfect Game. But yeah, they charge a lot of money. You know, there are a lot of things that go into that. I mean, they do it as a business. It's they're not doing it just for the good of the game.
And they make a lot of money.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
But if Major League Baseball goes to them and says and starts putting public pressure on them, you need to start enforcing pitch counts in all of your tournaments. Because they do in some of their big ones where they have people who keep score. And they track the pitch count, and you're allowed a certain amount per day if you're a certain age, and then you have to rest a certain number of days. They're called the Pitch Smart Guidelines. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of youth tournaments do not even check those things. I see it every summer. Because, again, coaching 14-year-olds, I'm watching 14-year-olds out there throwing 115, 120 pitches in a 7-inning game, and then the next game they turn around and they're playing shortstop. And the next, or they're catching or something. Like, the only way you can regulate those kind of things is from the top pushing down and saying, you guys, you need to enforce these rules, or we will not scout your events. We will ban our scouts from your events if you don't do this. And it won't cover all of them, because there are a lot of local tournament organizers who don't have the infrastructure, who don't have all that. But you know what? You know where the future major league players are?
In those events.
The big tournaments. Yeah. The big ones. And I'm talking about starting at 11, 12 years old. Because you'll see some of the biggest abuses at the younger ages because nobody's paying attention.
I would argue the moment the Major League Baseball decides to release this report, there is kind of use the term moral obligation. That's probably a little bit strong, but there is almost a moral obligation. They present this information. Now you got to do something about it. I think you're right. It starts right there.
And you know what? If Major League Baseball doesn't want to go to the point, and I'm putting a lot of the weight of this on Major League Baseball because they are the only ones with the power to change it. You're not going to tell a business you're trying to make money, go make less money or risk teams not coming to your tournaments. And do that at the risk of your business just because we say you should. Major League Baseball has to have a stake in this. I would argue Major League Baseball should try to buy Perfect Game or start their own tournaments that they run all over the place and put in really strict standards. So which do you think people are going to want to go to?
Maybe go to that one.
Do you want to go to the Major League Baseball sanctioned events that are monitored, that are controlled by Major League Baseball, and it's not just for money? Which would you rather send your team to?
And like we're just going down the line. I think they got rid of the Major League Baseball Scouting Bureau a few years
ago. Yeah, they did.
So there's a lot of out of work scouts right now. You could rehire some of these scouts and put them in that, and those reports could then be sent to all the teams.
Here's the crazy thing is you could do something like that. Create competition in that space. Give people a healthier alternative, right? Because the best programs, if you put that out there and you say, hey, Major League scouts will only be at these events for high school players. They're only going to be at MLB-run tournaments. They're not going to be at Perfect Game. They're not going to be at PBR. They're not going to be at any of the other ones. And then you get into the college ranks and say, hey, guys, come with us. Do with us so we can fix this problem. And you get more of the college coaches going to those too. The other tournament organizers will have to adapt and do the same kinds of things. And then you can start to make some progress. And here's the thing to me about Major League Baseball. The cost of doing this would be less than the cost of one starting pitcher contract going bad because of an arm injury.
Absolutely.
It would not cost you hundreds of millions of dollars. It would not cost that much. It just wouldn't. And the return over 10, 15, 20, 25 years could be improved arm health up and down the sport, which benefits Major League Baseball. But because we don't have a core structure in place, because everything's kind of localized or everything is done only by private entities that do not have Major League Baseball's best interests in mind, I'm saying Major League Baseball should be protecting their own business by expanding their business into the youth section so that you can have better control over how young pitchers are used. And again, you know, it's pitch counts, yes, but it's also like if a kid, I try to operate on a rule. It's not 100%. It doesn't always work, but like I try to operate on a rule. If you pitch game one of the day, you're either off in game two or you're a first baseman or you're a DH. You're not playing shortstop after you pitched in the same day. You're not catching and pitching in the same day. And it's hard to do because you have this other side. Right. You have players that don't want to sit.
Right. Parents that don't want their kids
to sit. And you have to be willing to tell them this is what's better for your player. And if you don't like it, go somewhere else, because this is how the smart people are going to do it. We're taking care of your kid. And you look at the youth baseball setup. So a typical weekend, forgetting which kind of tournament you're in, a typical weekend, you'll have two games on a Saturday. And then you'll have bracket play on Sunday, which could be one game and it could be four games. You can have, and I've done this a million times, six games in 2 days. At what level of sports does that make any sense from a physical health standpoint?
It doesn't.
And some teams go into that with only 10, 11, 12 players.
Yeah,
because nobody wants to sit. Everybody wants to play every game. So don't go in. So my program, we go in sometimes with 15, 16 guys. I've got room to sit people. I have the ability to say, you're not playing every game. And again, it's not always perfect. You get injuries, you're missing players, but you should try. But at no level of baseball do you ever play six games in 2 days.
The most is four games in 3 days when like some college leagues do a Friday game, a Saturday doubleheader, and a single game on Sunday.
But then that'll be followed by an off day.
Yeah, by 3 days off.
And also, those are grown men.
Yeah.
College baseball players, I got to break it to everybody. You may call them kids. Those are grown men. They're 6'2", 220. They're fully developed. They're working out year-round. They're not 12-year-old kids.
Okay, you said working out year-round. Just a couple other things from this. They identified more injuries coming between the start of spring training and opening day as opposed to once the season gets started. That's connected to these guys not operating correctly in their offseason.
Well, it's a combination. To me, I'm going to combine that with another topic. So to me, that is connected to the not training minor league pitchers to be major league pitchers.
Yes.
Those two things are the same idea, even though they're different things, right? So what happens is they're reducing workload so much in spring training that when you get to the regular season, you're not ready. But the games matter, so you're going all out. Right?
Yeah.
And yes, some of it is related to guys doing a lot in the offseason to try to improve, right? So, you know, you can't going to driveline, working on adding 2 miles an hour or increasing carry on your fastball or your spin rate on your curveball or tunneling, whatever. Like some of it's that because you're training. A lot of guys are training more intensely than they used to. But in spring training, you also don't get the number of innings that you need oftentimes. And then you get into the season and it's like, well, your last start in spring training, you threw 80 pitches. Now go throw 100. Well, You're increasing the workload 20%.
And you might be doing it when it's really cold
and
outside.
You're doing it where you're taking spring training games, which are low intensity, and regular season games, which are high intensity. You get paid for those games and by how you perform. Your team makes or misses the playoffs based on those games. So you go from low intensity and not enough work to really high intensity and more work in a week. And then you throw that in with how minor league pitchers have been developed in the last 10, 15, 20 years, where you'll take a guy, and I'll use a Cardinals example. Tink Hentz has still not thrown 100 innings in a year.
No.
He's not had a significant arm injury, although he did have, I think, a shoulder thing this past season. But the idea that you're going to limit guys to 3, 4, 5 innings of work in the minors and 75 pitch outings, and then when they get to the big leagues, hey, we need you to go 6. And we need you to throw 100 pitches. And we need you to do that 32 times. You're training to run a 5K, but you have to run a marathon. It doesn't make sense.
We have been very critical of the Cardinals and their player development and everything going on. And that's why Chaim Bloom is here. And that's why a lot of new people are coming to the organization. One area that the Cardinals very recently shifted to and they got right is last year the Cardinals led all of minor league baseball in innings per start.
By their starting pitchers.
They started pushing starting pitchers further in the minor leagues, and that is going to pay out dividends.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the
best news I've heard about like player development the Cardinals in a long time because it makes so much sense.
And hopefully this new group of people coming in continue down that path.
Yeah, and I mentioned Tink Hentz because he's an example, but that's not the typical Cardinals pitching prospect right now. You know, he might have specific concerns. You know, he had the shoulder thing this past year. He's slight of frame, so maybe that's why they've kind of gone easy on him. But that was just an example of what you see in a lot of places. But I think they're ahead of the curve on that, and hopefully they stick with it by doing that, you're also forcing pitchers to not just go max effort all the time. You cannot tell a person not to try hard, right? You can't put a limit on velocity. You can't put a limit on spin rate that gets you the better breaking ball because that works. You can't tell a pitcher be less than you can be. But what you can do is put them in a position where they have to learn that that's not what they can do all the time. That's how pitchers have been developed for 120 years. That's how Bob Gibson did it, right? That's how those guys back in the day threw 350 innings because they didn't throw as hard as they could all the time. And the reality for 2024 is your best place to be is in between those two. Throwing harder, but not all the time.
And the last thing on that before I get you out of here, this was more anecdotal than them really having science behind it, but they made the point that the pitch clock may have actually been a good thing, not a bad thing when it came to injuries, because it forced pitchers to not be able to throw max effort every single time.
I don't disagree. Yeah. And by the way, even if it's not making it better, it's certainly not making it worse.
No.
Look, we all know what leads to arm injuries. It's effort. It's the amount of effort. And this applies to anything. Do any physical activity at max effort, you're at more risk of getting hurt. Compare a sprint to a jog. You're not going to pull a hamstring jogging. You will sprinting full speed sometimes. Every time you're working at max effort, you are at more risk of injury. We know this. It's a biomechanical fact. It's not the pitch clock. It's none of these other things. People will say it's the sticky stuff and they've got to try harder. No, it's still the max effort.
100%.
It's still the max effort because if you put the sticky stuff on there, they're not going to try less hard. They're still going to try as hard as they do without it. They're just going to get a better result.
That's Kevin Wheeler. You'll be up on the Gas House Gang tonight with a special guest and Derek Gould.
Yeah, it was great. We had a great fun with it. I would highly recommend listening. We got a lot on Nolan Arenado, on the what if they get caught in between selling and rebooting and also competing. It's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, it's coming up tonight at 8 o'clock. Thanks for us.
You got it, buddy.
That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauly. We'll be back coming up in just a moment. Really interesting conversation coming up with somebody who's trying to help fans support basically minor league baseball players financially. I'll go through all that coming up in just a moment. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. So this next conversation you're going to hear, I recorded it when I was at the baseball winter meetings in Dallas last week. It's with Rob Connolly, co-founder of a company called Finleet. Now, the reason we didn't run it last week, actually, was because the company was still waiting to get official approval and everything. And when I talked to Rob, I gave him my word that we would not run it until they were a full go and they had all the approvals and everything that goes along with the industry that they're in. And they got that here over the last few days, giving us the opportunity to play this interview for you. So you've probably never heard of Finleet, and we're in a really weird spot right now when it comes to athletics and money. Specifically money for athletes. And we think about this largely in terms of college athletics and name, image, likeness. You know, yesterday when we did the show at the Jack Buck Awards, we had Chris May, the athletic director at SLU, and Laird Veach, the athletic director at Mizzou. And a lot of our conversation was based off that. Well, the interesting money side of things is not just when it comes to amateur athletes, actually professional athletes, but somewhat lowly paid at the moment, professional athletes can be part of it as well. That's where Finleet comes in. And I don't even know what to think about all this, but when Rob Connolly, the founder of Finleet, introduced himself, I wanted to talk to him. So this is my conversation. We recorded it last week in Dallas, and the first thing I asked Rob was just to kind of describe his company and what they're trying to do.
We actually learned that minor league baseball prospects for the past 7, 8, 10 years have been taking private lending deals from hedge funds where they would take upfront capital in exchange for future earnings. Most notably, Fernando Tatis Jr. with the Padres did a deal with a private hedge fund where he received approximately $500,000 for 10% of his future earnings, where that hedge fund made $34 million off of his $341 million contract extension just 2 years after doing that deal. So what essentially we're doing is, you know, giving fans the opportunity to participate and have a seat at the table on these type of opportunities.
How does that work?
So we will come with a deal with an athlete where an athlete will come to us and want, needs financial resources for off-season training or housing or helping, you know, maybe hedge against an injury risk. And so we will then work out a deal with that athlete for a percentage of his future earnings for upfront capital. And then we allow the fans to essentially purchase that from him and able to share in that athlete's journey, both emotionally and financially.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but what you just talked about with Fernando Tatis Jr., the amount of money going back in that direction, in many ways that sounds predatory to me. I guess, is what you guys do maybe a little bit more fair to the athlete than that type of situation?
Yeah, so it's interesting. There's two sides of this kind of answer. So one, it can seem predatory on the surface because we only talk about the big wins, but you need to realize that a lot of these players take these deals, never make it to the majors, and they never have to pay that money back, which is a big asset, big part of this. What was the other part of the question?
Just the front, is this more fair, I guess, than one of those hedge fund type situations?
Yeah, exactly. So what's interesting about Finleet is when athletes are doing deals with us, they're doing it directly with the fans in more of a retail environment, giving fans the ability to pull their money together, which tends to be better for the athletes because they're getting a slightly higher valuation versus working with a private hedge fund where, you know, it's all up front, all at once, and they're trying to get the absolute lowest valuation possible. You know, it seems like it's a little bit more of a better opportunity for the fans to get involved. On top of that, when it's all said and done, you know, after the amount is raised, the athlete not only gets the capital, but now they have thousands of fans that are really connected with that athlete in a very personal and unique way.
What's the, from a selection process, can any minor league player reach out to you guys, or do you kind of vet them and say, okay, this person has a X percent chance of getting to the big league, so this is a deal that we feel comfortable with?
Yeah, great question. So we built an AI algorithm tool that allows us to evaluate players using data. So we look at tons of different metrics and decide, you know, what player makes the most sense for our fans to have the opportunity to make a great return on. So one of the prospects we really like is Leonardo Bernal, who's one of the top catching prospects in baseball. He happens to be the number 6 to 9 prospect in the Cardinals organization, depending on what site you look at. So with Leonardo, you know, we contacted him. We talked about, you know, how Finleet works, and he loved the idea, and we were able to get a deal in place with him where fans are able to invest in Leonardo's career.
How does that? How did that come together? Like, do athletes reach out to you? Do you reach out to athletes or agents involved? What's that whole process like?
Yeah, so it's been great. So a lot of athletes, especially in minor leagues, have heard about us now. We're getting our name out there. So with Leonardo's case, he reached out to us, asking us how it worked. Him as agent met with us over the Arizona Fall League, and we just worked out perfect. We got the deal done in the Fall League.
Do agents like these type of deals?
Yeah, so it's really funny with the way the agents work. So some agents will say, you know, never do these deals. It's the worst deal. You don't do it. Some agents say you should definitely do the deal. But we feel like most of the agents take a neutral aspect to this because, you know, if they tell an athlete not to do a deal with us and then the athlete never makes it, the athlete will be mad at them. Mm-hmm. And then if they tell them to do the deal and the athlete makes $350 million, you know, they feel like the athlete may be mad at them. So if, by taking a neutral aspect and sharing all the details with the athletes, let them make an informed decision, and that's the best way the agents handle this.
I think a lot of people don't realize the life of a minor league baseball player. And some of these guys make good signing bonuses when they get drafted, but a lot of them don't. And it's not a ton of money. If you want to put your body is your tool to be in the best spot. So if you want to get coaching in the offseason, if you want to have access to things, that takes money. And some guys don't have access to it. So to me, that's where this is a really cool thing, because these minor league players get access to something that maybe they didn't have before. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. We're a platform that allows these athletes to give them the best chance to optimize their on-the-field potential. And by giving them this capital from fans, it's a great way for them to really give them the best chance to make it to the big leagues.
What is it for you like? Because I mentioned earlier, and I talked about college athletics and the wild, wild west that is right now. You're working in a athletics-related financial space that's kind of on a new frontier. What's it like right now working in that realm in this athletics world we're living in right now, where everything's changing on a daily basis?
It's absolutely insane. Like, talking to some college athletes who, you know, want to do deals with us, I look back like 10 years ago and go, like, how is this even happening? It's just so, it's so unique right now, and it's such a fast-moving industry. It's crazy. It's really hard to try to keep up with. It's been a lot of fun, though.
Can you do deals with college athletes?
Absolutely, yeah. So our deals aren't NIL deals. They're actually private financing deals, which don't fall under the NIL laws. So we can actually do deals with athletes.
From a fan standpoint, if they want to get involved in this, can you talk through, in addition, just the emotional connection of it, feeling like you're supporting a player for a team that you support, what are the other benefits of being involved in this?
Yeah, so we have different investment levels. We give away signed balls. There's an MLB package where the fans that invested in this opportunity can actually come out to spring training and meet Bernal and have a meal with him and get to know him on a personal level. But it's all about building those connections with these athletes, giving them the resources they need to maximize their potential, and just creating these unique opportunities.
That's another interesting thing about this, because we're also living in a world right now where VIP experiences are so important, and there's so much value to that. So you guys are doing the money side of it, but then there's also a chance for fans to experience something that they wouldn't be able to experience in just a normal situation.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's not about just the money. It's about that emotional connection with the athlete and the behind the scenes experience. I mean, that virtual meet and greets, you know, the personal letter from Bernal saying, thank you for participating in my career. All those little things add up to a really unique experience that you can't get normally in these business investment opportunities. This is a little bit more personal, and it makes it really a unique offering for fans to participate.
Yeah, I find this to be interesting. I'm sure there might be some people listening who would be interested in what you guys do, especially with the Bernal connection. What is the way to get in contact with you guys?
Yeah, the best way is to go through our website, finleet.com. That's FINLETE.com. And you can see Emmanuel Class A with the Guardians on there, as well as Leonardo Bernal.
Rob, really good to meet you. Interesting to learn about this new world that we're living in right now.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it, Matt.
That was my conversation from last week at the baseball winter meetings in Dallas with Rob Conley. Again, he is a co-founder of Finleet, a really interesting concept. I'm still trying to grasp completely how I feel about it. I like it. And, you know, the premise of it, I like it. I just, you know, it's just kind of it's a brave new world. You wouldn't have heard about stuff like that previously. So still trying to figure out thoughts on it. But I hope you enjoyed that conversation and you look at athletics maybe a little bit differently. And you can get involved, like he said, if you want to. Somebody like Leonardo Bernal, a Cardinals prospect, is involved with it. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this edition of the program. It's Graybar Sports Open Line. Starting to wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Just a reminder for you, the rest of the week is going to be a little bit different. Tomorrow we've got SLU Billikens basketball, so we're going to wrap things up a little early around 6:45 or so. And then on Thursday, we'll do just a half hour show in front of Thursday Night Football. On Friday, it is our countdown to opening day show as Mike Claiborne and myself will come your way. Generally, that show will air on Thursdays, but this week, because of Thursday Night Football, it is going to air on Friday. So that's what's going to be coming up over the next few days. Also coming up in just a moment, it is the Gas House Gang. Today, a little history made in the very short history of the Gas House Gang. Our first ever guest on the program as Derek Gould, lead baseball writer with the Post-Dispatch and STL Today, was on, and you'll be able to hear it. I mentioned this earlier with Kevin Wheeler. I think we talked about this during our 5:15 sports during Total Information PM. You'll hear it for yourself. I was a little surprised that the takeaway from the Gas House Gang for many people on social media today was that Nolan Arenado might not get traded. And I just, are there challenges that go along with it? Yeah, there are. I'm not trying to run away from that. I'm not trying to run away from the fact that Arenado did not, you know, per se request a trade, any of those things. But there are people out there that just have this belief that something's going to happen and Arenado is going to remain a Cardinal. And I'll be honest, like, part of me would like that to happen. I like Nolan Arenado a lot. I really do. But I don't see that happening. I don't really see a legit scenario where he sticks around. So you'll get to hear that coming up with Derek Gould. He is going to join Tom Ackerman and Kevin Wheeler. That's who's on the Gas House Gang today. A reminder for you, I know we keep talking about this, but it's something. Yeah, last night it was fun. I was at the Jack Buck Awards. I can't tell you how many people came up to me and made comments about the Gas House Gang. It really actually surprised me. It's something that's only been going for a few weeks now. And, you know, if you just hear me on the radio, you can't recognize me. You can't see me. You can see me on that. So people kind of knew, saw me, and I multiple people came up to me and recognized me from that and asked about it and said how much they enjoyed it. So it's something that you can watch live on social media channels. You can watch the archive of it on YouTube, or you can listen to it on all the podcast platforms. It's available. Just do a search for the Gas House Gang. My personal favorite, what I would encourage you to do, you can listen, take it, you know, you can take it in however you would like. But my personal favorite is just being able to go back and watch it on YouTube. But like we had mentioned previously, it now has its own podcast feed available on various podcast platforms. So you can check that out for yourself. And we always play it at 8:00 as a radio program. So that's going to be coming up in just a few minutes. Thanks so much for being tuned in with us this evening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow at 6:00 for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.